Good afternoon. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis, sir.
Yes, welcome.
Yes, I want to ask you a quick question. What is your take on these businesses that you go and you shop, spend all your money, and then when you're exiting, you're going to find a security asking you to see your receipt?
Well, that is a matter that has been in place for quite some time now, and I consider it to be what they would see as a security measure to ensure that people actually take out what they've paid for rather than the things they haven't paid for. What do you consider to be wrong with it?
You go and you spend thousands of dollars, hundreds of dollars supermarkets, and I realized recently a very popular supermarket just implemented this. And I'm exiting, and a security is going to ask to see my receipt. Now, I feel very less than privileged when a security is going to ask me to see my receipt. Now, I've paid for my product. How dare you ask to see my receipt?
But let me ask you something.
What do you want?
Are you offended because you're offended because a supermarket that wasn't doing it has introduced it? Well, you weren't offended. Were you offended when the supermarkets, the supermarkets that came into Barbados, introduced it from the very start? Or you don't shop at those places? You got a lot of noise in your background.
I don't shop at those places that do these things.
Okay.
So when I walk in, go and spend my money, and then I'm exiting, and you can ask me to see my
receipt. Because people steal.
Okay, but if you suspect me of stealing, arrest me.
They don't suspect you of stealing. They don't suspect you of stealing. They're trying to make sure that they protect their interests in that way. You know full well that when you're running businesses, a major challenge in them is pilferage. And therefore, they've put those measures in place. Your situation suggests that if you decided that you were not going to shop at any of those places that had implemented that system from the very beginning, then it means that you're going to have to, might very well have to shift the supermarket that you shop at if they have not introduced that particular approach. I mean, I must tell you, as some person who shops, I've done it, I've been through the process, and I have no difficulty with it.
Mm-hmm. I have a difficulty with it because I spend in, let's say, $800, 5 bags, and a security guard going to ask me to
let me ask you something. So, yeah. You would feel more comfortable if you only had purchased $50 in goods?
If I feel more
comfortable? Because you're putting the emphasis on the quantum of money.
I would feel comfortable to know I go and spend my money and I can exit a building in peace and safety and in comfort than somebody saying, let me see my receipt. The thing is, it's my receipt. And if I refuse to show you my receipt, what are the consequences? Tell me.
I don't know, because I never challenged any security guard that asked me to show my receipt.
That's what I'm coming to tell you. I challenged them, and they can't give me a reason. And their thing is, okay, sir, let me let you go. There are no consequences. If I challenge you to see my receipt, no, you can't tell me what you want to see my receipt. And then I refuse to show you my receipt.
My question to you is this.
Mm-hmm.
What do you lose?
What do I lose?
Mm-hmm.
What do I lose in not showing them my receipt?
If you were to show them the receipt, what do you think you would lose?
If I show him my receipt?
Yeah.
No, hear what you say. My receipt. It is my receipt. I have the...
Some of you got time to waste, man. That to me, that's making such an issue of what to me is a small point. That's my interpretation of it.
It's your point. It's your interpretation. But my thing is, I have the option to give you or not to give you.
If you think that that is worth making an issue of, well, that's up to you. I don't consider it an invasion of my privacy to that point. I mean, if you want invasion of privacy to be concerned about, there's so much more that is happening around you these days. I mean, your phone, your telephone conversations and all sorts of stuff can be intercepted by average people in very effective ways and stuff like that. You go sleep at night, and you could find yourself in a situation where your girlfriend go through your phone from top to bottom.
Gosh. It's another thing that's creeping in, and I think that we as customers got to stand up.
I suppose.
The Americans brought it in, and all of a sudden now our little businesses grabbing hold of it and run wild.
Well, there's a reason why they must have gotten involved in that, because they must have been losing too much money.
But how is it now that a security can pinpoint I didn't pay for a product?
Well, I suppose they should be able to establish that when they look at your list of items.
And they should be able to establish it with all the cameras in the business.
All right. Well, that's your position. And I have to respect that we are different people. All right. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
Yes, thank you. I have just one little query. During this period, they're telling us to pay our bills at SurePay. And you will hear ads coming from other entities saying because they're trying to do this for their staff and the next thing. But what about the people at SurePay?
What about those people? What do you think?
In other words, companies are saying you cannot come and pay the bills at the insurance companies, other places.
So they're putting more pressure on SurePay.
Exactly.
That's exactly what they're doing. But the people who manage SurePay also have to be cognizant of two sets of people. They got to be taken into consideration the people who work at SurePay, and they have to take into consideration the clients, and that they're going to have long lines once there is an increased demand for that service.
Exactly. So to me, when you're doing that, you're putting the more, you're taking pressure off of you and putting it on other people.
Well, but the other people need to be able to recognize how much pressure they can bear.
I agree with you.
You know?
I agree with that part.
I mean, it means that the business for that particular company is being expanded.
Exactly.
And as it expands, it also has to take into consideration the social distancing and this COVID environment and that sort of thing. And it would most likely require somewhat different arrangements. Otherwise, you're going to have the complaint that we had from this man this morning, who claimed that he was in a line for 5 hours, and then when he got to the wicket or the door, it was closed.
Yes.
You know? So I think, but you see, I come back to the point I was making much earlier about the fact that we are now in an environment that we got to learn to live with COVID, all right? And it means that there are going to be several adjustments that will have to be made. A lot of the things that we have had to go and stand up in line for now have to be done online, not in a line, online. The government departments, things that we were talking about doing, now have to be done in haste, because it makes no sense. This whole idea of going to renew your license and standing up in a line at the licensing office or the BRA, whatever, all of these things we now need to speed up and make sure that more work can be done online. There can be greater convenience in that regard. But having said that, we also have to give great assurances on cybersecurity. Because that is, you know, the next thing you know, it's easy for people to hack this and hack that. Mm-hmm. All right? So that's how I see it.
Yes, I agree with you. But I still would say that the same way that the other entities safeguarding the workers, which I do not disagree with, they too should also bear in mind that, as we say, the people who are in charge of SurePay should also do likewise.
Yeah, but they have to be sensitive to how the business is changing. And if they don't, if they're not able to respond to that, then what they end up with are too many complaints coming from people about how the business is being done.
Exactly. So the same issue up here has, let's say, one person per day. The same entities can have the same one person at their entity per day. It will make it much easier for everybody.
Well, we'll see.
You have a pleasant day.
Thanks for calling. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? It's 12:15. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, David. My name is Anthony Rose, and I'm calling from Master Technologies.
Hi.
As you might know, we are the developers of SurePay and SurePay Online.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've been hearing some of the calls, and clearly it's something that we understand, the frustration that some of the people, a certain lot of the people who are calling are feeling. So I thought I'd give a call.
Sure.
And see if we can answer some of the questions, maybe.
Well, I think the big issue here is that some people feel they're having to stay in the lines too long.
Yeah.
And that the certain business operations have basically shifted that particular burden to you. But
sure.
In the process, your lines are too long.
Yeah, and we are very aware of that. No, David, again, I first of all say that I fully empathize with the inconvenience that the current situation is causing. But if I can take a few moments, I'd just like to address those frustrations in a little bit in terms of the long lines. David, the fact is that we operate two of the 42 payment points. It's not an excuse. It's just part of the how the model works. We operate two of those points. One is at Cape Shepherd, which, as you know, is closed. The other one we operate is right here at our office in White Park Road. And luckily, because of the easing of the restrictions, we've been able to open our office here in White Park Road this morning as of 8 o'clock. But that only addresses two of the locations, obviously. Of the remaining 40 locations, all are operated by agents, right? In some instances, those agents may own the retail establishment within which the SurePay is operating, but in many cases, the agent may be renting space within that location. And that's important to understand. Very often, the space itself is such that under normal circumstances, it may only be able to host one, two cashiers at max. Some of them may have three. But under the current situations where we have to, or where those agents, I have to say, have to work within the requirements of social distancing, those booths can now only accommodate one. One person means that, well, yeah, we're going to be, or they're going to be processing less people at that, at those booths. Now, I'd like to say that not all the locations have had very long lines. Our own location downstairs here, for instance, since it's open this morning, we've had a constant set of people, but not necessarily the very long lines that you may have experienced in other places. But that's simply because, again, of the 42 locations, right now we can only open 19 of those. And furthermore, you know, there are a number of constraints imposed by the pandemic and the mitigating factors employed to stop its spread, which have required that some of the collection points remain closed. But our team, on a daily basis, has been taking into consideration the safety, the security, and other logistical factors to determine whether additional locations can be opened. Only when our team, working along with the agent, and in some cases the retailer, if the retailer is different from the agent, can we be and that we can be assured, again, of the customer's safety, the safety and security of our staff or the employees of the collection point or the agent, and that where we can make sure that the payment can be fulfilled in its entirety, then we can allow a location to open. And we're doing that every day. So last week, I think we had maybe 12 locations open. This week, we have 19. I'd like to think that over the course of the next few weeks, we'll have all of our locations.
Understood. I understand the difficulties that you face there.
Yeah.
But how do you see us moving more to online payments instead of all of this, given the kind of pressures that you are under right now?
David, I'm glad that you raised it. SurePay started in 2003. In 2010, we launched online. And in fact, we have an online payment service that's been functioning in Barbados now for 10 years. And the interesting is, in the last several weeks, we've literally registered thousands of new users in the last couple of weeks. So I think that's an important point, because it is important to know that if a person has access to a bank account and an online or internet accessible device, that person shouldn't be signing up in the line, because they're actually taking up space for somebody who doesn't have access to those facilities. So SurePay Online is definitely an avenue that is open to people. And here's the great thing. With a service like that, you can see what you're owing your various billers. You don't need to have a bill. You can see what you're owing to Light and Power, or see what you're owing to Water Authority. You can see what you're paying, you're owing to any of those billers. And you can make your payments in full, in part, however you choose to pay those, you can do so.
So the point
I'm making, David, is that there are alternatives. I would strongly recommend that people go to the SurePay Bills Online, look at the site, register. We've had some issues there as well, and I'll be very clear on that, simply because of, again, the numbers of people who have been registering online. But
so even there you have a bottleneck?
It's just because of the vast number of people.
But you can't send nobody else there then?
No. I understand. There's not a bottleneck as such.
You can't get on.
What happens is, some instances, people may have a problem in terms of the process. And if they run into a problem, they need to call us. And then there might be a bottleneck, because there might be a flood of people calling at any given time. Not because they're having a problem with that, but they may have other queries, other questions, etc. But we get back to everyone.
But let me ask you.
It may take a little while, but we get back. We hold your hand and we will walk you through.
Is any one category or the other restricted in accessing this? For instance, somebody says SurePay Online doesn't allow or accept credit union accounts to register.
That right now, we cannot facilitate credit union accounts, and that gets a little technical. That will change in the coming months as the credit unions are join the ACH payment system in the country. There's a payment system in the country that the credit unions are not part of today. But once they join the payment system, then we will be able to take credit union.
Is anybody else similarly affected?
No. Right now, the main requirement for SurePay is that you have a bank account. And once the credit unions are in the ACH, then they will be able to join that aspect as well. So today there are literally thousands of people that are able to pay their bills from the comfort and convenience of their home. And we'd like to see more people be able to do so. But we are also cognizant of the fact that there are other folks who may not have that facility. And for them, the SurePay payment points that we have across the island were established especially to meet that particular need. Yes, right now, the sheer numbers that are coming, and the fact that you have to have this thing called social distancing and the restrictions that has caused, and a number of other logistical factors that too numerous to get into.
Okay,
there are
so,
a lot of moving parts.
So where we are right now,
continue to work on those.
Yours is a fine example of a company that will have to undergo some change as a result of COVID-19.
Okay.
And therefore, how do you envisage this playing out from here on? If COVID stays with us for another year, another year and a half, 2 years, how do you see yourself reconfiguring to accommodate that?
Well, David, you brought up one of the main things that you brought up is the whole online. And yes, the online is there. And what we want to be able to do is facilitate a greater number of online and by facilitating, I mean make the whole process of registering that much more simple than it is today. That's one aspect, if you will, that we're working on, and that's not down the road. That's something that we're working on daily.
But let me ask you this question: if I could go online and pay you, why can't I go online and pay the bank directly, or the utility?
From the utility?
Yeah.
Well, that's a question for the utilities. But here's the thing, Dave. It then means that you now have to go take time to go onto each utility and make payments to each one of those utilities.
Oh, so you're a one-stop shop.
Whereas right now, we can both deliver that what you owe that utility, so you can see, and you can make a payment in one time to all of them. And in fact, that has always been one of the hallmarks of even our collection points and locations.
One of the things that you need to do, because I understand you took advantage of the opportunity to come and say a couple of things once the matter was raised, and balance dictates that once these matters were raised that you should be given a chance to speak to it. But I really suggest to you that perhaps you need to spend a little bit more time sharing information with the public, especially at a time like this. And perhaps we should get our advertising manager to call you. All right.
David, I would assure you, I think we've had some ads in your press.
That may be so. In the press, the press is not on StarCom. And there are a lot of people in Barbados who listen rather than just read. So you need to support that, because I will confess that I never even knew that you had an online presence until now.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that's the work that we have to do.
Well, you got some work to do.
I take your point.
All right.
Take your point, David, and we will see if we can get more of that.
Sure, we will accommodate you for sure. All right, thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
Hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, yes, good afternoon, sir.
Well, you only got a short time, but be quick.
Yes, no problem. Now, I am saying the last point that you just made, I'm saying I'm really surprised to hear that as well, because when he said that they were online for 10 years, I am shocked. I thought maybe it was about maybe like the last year or something like that, because you can't tell me that you're offering something and you don't advertise. You have to be able to advertise. One of the other things I understand in the country, there's a lot of people who don't have access to like debit and credit cards. And I mean, you have other options available like M-Money. Okay, you have different forms of payment. So when the gentleman is saying that, you know, they have to integrate this system, there are many, many good developers around here who can integrate the system, who can build these kind of systems to have them integrated in a matter of 6-7 weeks. So maybe they need to look to outsource their programming.
Well, they have to. I think essentially what they have to do is to look at the business and try to determine how it can respond to this increased demand, you know?
Exactly. But, I mean, this is something that you need, because, for instance, I have been to Switzerland. I spent some time there, and everything is digital. You understand? I mean, you make your payments from your phone. In some cases, you don't even see cash for weeks because everything is digital. We need to be able to take, you know, look at being like that in the Caribbean, because, I mean, even when you look at COVID, it is eventually going and look, you know, going that direction. So I think a lot of persons, a lot of companies out there need to be able to look at developing their systems.
Okay. We got to leave it right now. Down to brass tacks. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. You on the air?
Yeah.
Hello, you are on the air.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
Mr. David?
Yes, sir. Will you call me Mr. David, I think? I'm either David or I am David Ellis. But not Mr. David.
Or Mr. David Ellis.
You just call me David.
yeah, I know that.
All right.
This gentleman that called about this security, you got a sure receipt. That was going on for a long time. That was going on pretty long. All the way down at, what you call it, place down at Black Rock. Solo?
Well, I don't think that we have had it as a practice across the board among supermarkets.
Not so supermarkets, quite a few places I see it.
No, but he is concerned about its introduction.
Mr. Ram, and then up
he has raised it in the context of a supermarket.
Oh, well, I never had it at the supermarket. Because when I had it at the supermarket, the same way I treat the others at the other places, I would treat him. I would tell everyone, you got to take it from me, you got to take it, or can't back it me, or can't back it. He goes, I want it too.
That is making really a big thing out of something relatively small, though. Tell you the truth.
I don't, listen. I don't think as a country you get that low that you are asking by for receipt.
Well, stop it. You know what you really need to be concerned about? The extent to which people will go into supermarkets and take up people's things and walk out with them without paying.
But that is the people problem.
Yes, well, and that is how they are combating it. You think I can join you all in that? I ain't supporting that kind of thing. Look, a number of people have said here on the WhatsApp that if you have nothing to hide, that is not an issue.
But so do I think, but I don't submit to them. I'm just walking along, Mr.
Well, I am not here to encourage you all to just start to a movement now to say to people, you know, if you don't put one security measure in place, then you're going to have to put another. But if you're in a situation which obviously is forcing some people to consider different approaches to try to ensure that there's security in their operations. And you're prepared to pay, you're prepared to do it with other companies that come into the country. And now, but in other instances, you're objecting to it.
I like I said, if I go anywhere at any spaces, and I come down to you, I just ask for an excuse and go on with my receipt and my goods. I done with that. I know that receipt, so if you don't feel I got one, well, like I say, you can either arrest me or take me the goods from me or whatever, whatever. But I just keep moving. I don't stop.
All right, well, that's you. It isn't something that I would encourage, that approach. I feel that if you have nothing to hide, and I've been into stores time and time again, and that has been required, and what? There's been no problem. Some of you just trying to create strife out of little or nothing, in my judgment. Down to brass tacks. Somebody says here, you go abroad and you complain. With the same thing. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is Mohammed Nasser. How are you?
I'm okay, and you?
Yeah, likewise, man. I call you about two things. One is the hotel industry trying to get the hotel out of tourism. It is just call it going again. The government of Barbados pumps has all been pumping a tremendous amount of money into the tourist sector. Don't you think it's time enough that the government be third to hold equity is just giving them the money all the time?
That the government should do what?
Instead of giving them this money all the time, which they do, is it not time enough the government demand shares or not shares, but let me say equity in these companies so that they can have some kind of control and make some benefit back off the money they put
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
You remember that the government had shares in hotels before? I remember too.
Listen, Ellis, I want to have you time, but this is what I'm talking about. I am saying there's a difference between having shares in hotels and giving hotels or to a sector big set of free money that they can do what they like with. The government should be, if they're putting in the money, they should have some say in what is done on the development. I'm not talking about actually buying shares in a hotel, right? What they are
so how would you do that? How would you structure that in such a way that the government will have a say?
If you want $100,000 from me,
yeah,
I must have some interest in that hotel for that $100,000. I'm not here to tell you.
Let's move beyond just.
Got a loss. I didn't lose.
Let's move beyond saying you must have an interest. What exactly are you going to be in a position to do?
I want to make sure that I have an interest so that I could deal with the government.
So you will sit on the board?
Right. If you put somebody on the board, yes. Why not?
You put them, right. So right.
And you're buying food stuff for the hotel.
And you
would should be able to tell them, listen, you know, the government's finance, this is the people's money. you should buy that food stuff that we can get here locally.
Well, you're socialist-oriented solution.
May I give you my money?
It's a socialist-oriented solution. Just let me say to you, let's discuss this. There were two occasions where the government ventured into tourism projects. One of them was the project at Haywoods, and the other one was the much discussed project that we sank so much of our money into. Gems of Barbados is the other one. I would suggest to you, have shown over time that they don't necessarily run those things well. And the idea that government will become involved also introduces politics, because you get politicians then believing that they should also be in a position to send their constituents to get a job.
But that's having all time.
And yeah, but you see, once the government got a stake in it, the politician will believe that he has more right to send somebody to get a job. So eventually what happens, as you've seen happen in state, even in state-owned entities, eventually what happens is that you reach a situation where it helps to create gross inefficiency in the operation of the place. So that's the other side of that.
Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
If the government were investing in hotels, they were pumping money in hotels that had no investment in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I'm saying that money now that they're pumping hotels that they had no investment in, mm-hmm. they should have some say.
Yes, you know what? And take your idea one step further. And the money that they pump into the airlines to bring people here, they should also have a stake in the airline, right?
Why not?
You have a stake in American Airlines, and they should have a stake in Delta, and they should. So you understand where you're going?
What's wrong with that?
But how you think it's feasible? You really believe that's feasible? That somebody is going to sit down and say yes to that?
Let me tell you why it is feasible. The problem in the Caribbean is that each of these countries functioning differently in the tourist sector. FS set up one policy for the tourist sector. This idea about you got to pump all this money into tourism because tourists will bring foreign exchange. There's nobody on earth going to stop people from coming to Barbados. Barbados, St. Lucia, all of them people will come. There's a division between tourism and tourists. And we are pumping too much money into tourism.
Why?
And instead of getting the tourist money, stay.
Why are we doing that?
We are doing it because we do not know any better. And we're afraid of childish things.
Right. And you don't believe that this idea of government venturing into equity and that sort of thing has been explored before? Certainly. In our lifetime, I have no doubt that that has been explored. But there is that other side of it. Now, you have many people who would say to you, well, if I have to run my operation on the basis of the government dictating to me how it should be run, well, I am not going to have anything to do with that. You could keep your money.
I didn't know the government could dictate anybody.
All right, so there will be a minority shareholder.
But right, why not? It is their money. It is the people's money. You mean that the government must pump money into these tourists?
When is the last time? When you talk about pumping money, tell me, when is the last time you saw the government pump money into the hotel sector, the tourism sector?
They just give billions to Sandals.
In the form of concessions. So you think that if you really believe that if the government has said to Butt Stewart, well, you know what, Mr. Stewart, in exchange, let's quantify how much money we are putting in concessions into this thing.
Uh-huh.
In exchange for that, we need to have a seat on your board of directors. You really believe that Sandals would have been in Barbados?
I'm but sure we say no. We leave somewhere.
All right, then. Well, but that's the crux of the matter. If you think that you are strong enough that you can get people to say, well, I don't want to be involved in that. I mean, a similar thing can, right now with COVID, you know that there will be a need to give some kind of support. So this is, for you, the ideal time for all of these hotels in Barbados, for Barbados, the Barbados government to say, you know what, in exchange for our support, we must have a seat on your board of directors, and therefore...
That's what I'm saying, Miss Ellis.
I don't know that they... Let me say to you, each person is entitled to a perspective, huh? And you are surely... But I will say to you that the track record that governments have shown in their involvement in various things does not suggest to me that we should be into that kind of socialism at
and
this stage.
And the amount of money that government is wasting in the hotel sector to use it to develop the agriculture and the manufacturing in Barbados, we should be in that kind of development then. Because we can't every time somebody fails call everybody a failure. Mm. And if somebody succeeds, how great the body that succeeds is. But as somebody fails, everybody is a failure.
Many of the people involved in the tourism sector, the hotel sector of this country, are also involved in the promotion of Barbados. They promote their properties, and by extension, they help to promote the country as a whole. So that is also taken... Pardon?
They don't promote Barbados for Barbadians. They promote Barbadians for themselves.
Well, look, you know, you are a businessman. Look, you have spent all of your... You have spent all of your years in business, and you want to tell me that when you do things, you don't do them for yourself, and the people people benefit as a consequence.
Mr. Johnson, Mr. Ellis, me, you find the same page. I do it for myself.
And people benefit as a result.
And the masses should have some fear. And that is why the country is in crisis today.
Well, I really, as far as I'm concerned...
In Barbados.
Pardon?
They're producing in Barbados. That cannot be right. But I want to talk to you about one more thing because I appreciate the time you're giving me here, see?
Mm-hmm.
I discovered that every time people talk about small business people, you have a habit of saying that, oh, you know, they take people money and they don't go back and they don't do work and think properly. Well,
you mean the independent contractors? You mean people like plumbers and people like that? I say so. Well, I don't have... Listen, I am not afraid to say again.
But Mr. Ellis, you know I'm not afraid to say what you want.
You can say what you want to say. You want to come to take me to task for saying so?
I'm not saying, Mr. Ellis, that your body wants to tell you something so you would think a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know the amount of people in Barbados are all small contractors and small businessmen money.
Mm-hmm.
Pay 50% and then we'll pay the rest. It is unbelievable. If you know the amount of people that own even me, a 5,000, a 10,000, a 3,000, you can't get it.
Mm-hmm.
I had one there when the Chief Justice, not the Chief Justice, the first Chief Justice of Barbados, I had a manager that had, I did some work for him, he wouldn't pay me my money at all. And I went to the Chief Justice. And he said, husband did work for you? He said, yeah. He said, it is satisfactory? He said, yeah. He said, so why are you not paying him the balance of his money? You make sure by tomorrow evening he has his money. I got my money next evening. So we got the balance, Mr. Johnson. Sorry for calling you Mr. Johnson. You know, I respect you and I respect Mr. Johnson. But let me be serious. We cannot continue every time something happens saying that these small contractors do this and do the turn, do the fork. They make 8 and 10 contractors go up on the site, make everyone quote all the waste of money, the time, the energy, and go on the site, and make everyone quote, and they don't even analyze the quality, whichever one is the cheapest to take, and then when they run into trouble, you can't blame the small contractor, Mr. Ellis. It goes both ways.
You know, I want to say to you, that I don't believe that there has ever been any discussion on the behavior of these small operators that does not take into consideration the fact that they are owed money too. I mean, we have had that discussion, and we have accepted, that. But I hold to the position, Mr. Nasser, that too many little people in this country get ripped off.
and too many small contractors and small businesses
that may be so. I am not going to dispute that is the situation as well. But you know too many scenarios where people complain about these things. Is that something that we can get an improvement on after all that we are going through now? I'm not so sure. I think that is part and parcel of the makeup of this country today, where everybody seems to think that they can, you know, rip off somebody else, or all too, well, it's not everybody, but too many people feel that way.
Everybody, because that would be me and you, and I don't think so. And I don't think
well, you know, it's too many people who feel that way. I've already said that. All right, too many people, and I hear too many complaints about it. All right,
yeah. But Mr. I also hear a lot of complaints of fellas come and tell me they can't get paid to do the people work, and the people don't pay them. So you have to.
So
have
that
to
means that we have a serious cultural problem. That
that must be discussed on your radio.
But we discuss it here already. We discuss it from time to time. We're discussing it now. The question is, how are you going to change it? How are you going to make an improvement in it?
Mr. Ellis, it can be improved if government after government do not come along and believe only a minority groups to control the wealth. And the others must wait for crumbs that don't come sometimes. It can be improved. The hotel industry can be improved. Trade and industry, agriculture and rubbish can be improved. Every time you open your mouth to challenge it, somebody can dislike you. But that's why it don't bother me. Isn't that, Mr. Ellis, we say something about you that I don't think is right. It don't mean that I don't like you. It don't mean that tomorrow I would not do anything to save you if I could save you. But in my opinion, what you're doing is wrong. And I'm not talking about you know, Mr. Ellis here.
I heard you. I got you.
If it's something that I do that you think is wrong, and you challenge me that you don't like me, and maybe we can get rid of that, Mr. Ellis, the sooner we understand that people cannot only vote, but they must defend their right, we can have better government. And when people stop being in a position where they feel they can be victimized by those who are in parliament, we can have better government. We have to have discussions on adjusting the economic structure of this country. Too few people getting too much, and the majority getting very little. And every time you talk about it, they build enemies. There's something that I can discuss. I just went to the Prime Minister really strong and fit and well. And if I am going to go out through this country, man, and I'm going to stay in every nit and granny in this country. There are things in this country must change, Mr. Ellis. It's not to do with me or you. It's not to be wrong that must be righted.
All
I
right.
I really appreciate your time, Mr. Ellis.
Thank you very much for calling. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Hi, good afternoon.
I've been listening to the Shawpay debate today, and I have to say, I'm amazed at what I've actually heard. I'm a returnee who's lived outside of Barbados for 51 years, and I must say that COVID-19 has exposed how differently things are done in this country. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why people have to spend so much time in lines to pay utility bills, collecting pensions, and so on. During my time abroad, all of my utility bills, my council land tax, and so on, were paid through my current bank account, utilizing the bank's direct debits and standing order systems. And all this was done free of charge. Never had to pay a single penny. So I don't understand why this can't be done through the banks here in Barbados. I think the banks here are getting away with murder. And I think the government should do something about it.
Well,
it would save so much time. We talk about productivity, but people, you know, people have to leave their jobs to go and queue up to pay these bills. I mean, it's nonsense.
Yes.
And I left here in 1964, really, and when Barbados was still a British colony. So all the systems that were used here was used in the UK. But, 51 years later, things have changed so drastically in the UK, it's unbelievable.
And, in all fairness, the current administration has put a lot of emphasis on this. some things have already begun to change. I mean, we are in a situation right now where people can go and deal with their income tax returns online. I mean, we've had some problems with the Tamis system, but generally speaking, we have seen significant change in that regard.
But surely these things should have been done a long.
That's time. True. We're not going to fight about that. We agree. But, you know, some people may tell you, you're familiar with the saying around here, taking time in laziness. some people may tell you that. But we are seeing change, and there is really an urgency which the current administration is attaching to it, which I believe will now be further accelerated by the fact that we've had COVID and we've been forced to do these things for a change, And
yes.
I understand your frustration, but bear with us.
Yeah.
We're going to get there. We are going to get there. We're working towards that as a country. There are some people who have to take the leap. There are a lot of people in this country, in your age group, sir, who are reluctant to do things online.
Well, I don't understand why. I just don't understand.
Fair. It's fair. It's fair. They haven't been brought up in an environment where they've had to do as much of it as you did.
No.
And I'm sure when you were living in Britain, when this was being introduced, there were people who had a degree of reluctance as well.
Yeah, to some extent. But I think, people, after a while, they sort of accept that they've got to move on.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling. This idea which has been floated here by Mr. Nasser, that the government should be involved in exchange for the money which has been given in terms of concessions, that the government should have a stake in the hotels and stuff like that. I mean, when you look at the support that government has given, not only to hotels, because you have to look across the board. I mean, the agricultural sector has also had concessions. There are manufacturers who have also had concessions. Is the same principle going to be applied to other sectors as well? Or you're going to say that this equity should only be reserved for the tourism sector? See, these are the types of issues that you have to grapple with once you start going in that direction. And there is a real philosophical reaction that you are going to get to any such plan. The Americans and others who think like them are going to call it some form of nationalization, creeping nationalization and that sort of thing. So you've got to be prepared for all of those elements associated with that kind of plan. Business people will themselves be the first to come out and say, but what is this? And then you have to look at what's the cost, what's the benefit. You can talk about it. It is worth talking about. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello, am I online now?
You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm calling to find out if under this phase two, domestic workers are included. I know they were excluded in phase one, but are they included in phase two?
I believe so, but I...
Because as I look through the list in today's paper, they mention cleaning services for businesses and essential services, but no mention of domestic workers.
Well, we need clarity on that. Mm-hmm. Because I know some people have interpreted it as saying that domestics can come to work today.
Yeah.
But we need clarity on it. You ask for what reason? You have a domestic working for you?
Yes, and I want to tell her if she can come as from Thursday, because she comes on Thursdays.
How has it been for you over these weeks without that assistance?
Well, one has to live, One has to live. And my house is not that big, so I can manage. But to be honest with you, I like the help.
Yeah. And some of those people have really been under tremendous pressure, because these are people who do live paycheck to paycheck.
That is true. Or payday to payday.
Mm-hmm. And they have been among the hardest hit by the inability to work.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I had to bring some groceries to my helper, you know, to help her out during this trying time.
Yes.
So how can I find out if domestic workers are included or not?
I think we will have to ask the relevant government department.
I tried calling the government information service, and the person who answered said she is not sure.
Right. And therefore, they need to clarify it. Like, there's some people who listen to Brass Tacks who are associated with the administration, and they should tell us. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.